Support comes from Warren Perrin, author of Acadian Redemption, the history of the origin of the Cajun culture. From the terror of exile to the triumph of reconciliation, and Beau Soleil, the man who led the first group of Acadians to Louisiana. A French translation of the book entitled Une Saga Acadienne is now available. More at acadianmuseum.com.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
I've been waiting, Mr. Oil, this long your Tuesday. And ever since you've been waiting, Mr. Oil, you never have got off pay. Grind on, mama, have it done, dumb grind. That's an act, Mr. Oil, can he take a walk? Mr. Oil and the Batman, you're going to come right back. Grind on, mama, have it done, dog crying. That's when he jumped Mr. Oil to be off on the wagon. Set him back uptown to get him a load of beef. Crying on mama, have it done, dog crying. When he got back to the house, he only hit them to be mad. And he walked up back uptown, something he really liked. Crying on mama, I did done dumb crying. He was walking down Ryan Street, looking down in the showcase. He thought he had done seen this thing, what he really needs. Crying on mama, I did done dumb crying. By the time he wasn't looking in the showcase, here comes Mr. Henry Reed. Mr. Sheriff, please come walking, put 245 in his face. Crying on mama, I did done dumb crying. Mr. Henry Reed, deputy, come running, clap from across the street. Then pick him up, Batson, for he comes to you under the arrest. Crying on mama, I'm done dumb crying. Batson asked Mr. Henry Reed, what you arresting me for? Said, that's all right, Batson, you know all about yourself. Crying on mama, having done the crime. Rest poor little Batson, took him to the barricade. And then the people begin to gaze up from mile and mile around. Crying on mama, having done the crime. When Batson got in the jail house, locked up in the cell, he took a pencil right in his hand, he mocked every day he made. Crying on mama, having done the crime. Batson told the sheriff, you know that's wrong. Look, I've been charged to kill the old family, and I know I ain't done the crime. Crying on mama, I never harmed no one. Batson begins to cry, but it was his voice. The three-year-old Batson was crying, just like a baby child. Crying on mama, having done the crime. The day Batson cried, this is the word he said. You're trying to fall. Murder, I know I never harmed the one. Crying no mama, I never harmed the one. When the judge find him guilty, the fact he rolled him down. And then the German passed his sinner, told Batman he had to be hung. Crying no mama, I did done the crime. Batman begins to wonder, Parson began to moan. Parson told his people, just have to leave it home. Grind up, mama, have a dance of grind. You may bring me coffee, you may bring me tea. Look like you bring me heaven, but I won't accept that jailhouse key. Grind up, mama, have a dance of grind. Now you may dress in rain, you may dress in light.
Welcome to Encore. That was Stephen Chain and his group, and they were doing a song called Batson. That's from the Lomax recordings, recorded in 1934 by Alan Lomax. And today we're going to be focusing on the Lomax recordings. We have Josh Caffrey in the studio, who has just released a book about the Lomax recordings and transcriptions of the songs, the lyrics, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about that. How you doing today, Josh?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. Doing wonderful.
Awesome. Well, so has the book officially come out yet?
Yes. The book is officially released as of November the 2nd.
November the 2nd. All right. Great. And you guys played Black Pot a little bit?
Yeah, we had sort of a pre-release at the Black Pot Festival where we performed some of the songs that were recorded in 1934. Myself, my wife Claire Caffrey, Joelle Savoie, Chaz Justice, Richard Big Money Burgess, and Christy Guillory.
Mm, awesome. It sounds great. And how long... I guess we can jump right into a little history of the...
Sure.
Unless you want to describe kind of what the book is about. Why don't you do that? Tell us a little bit about the book and what it's got in store.
Well, the book, it's basically, in some ways, an old-fashioned song collection. It's based on the recordings that John Lomax and Alan Lomax made in 1934 in Acadiana. Most of these recordings still haven't been released. They recorded about 200 songs, a little bit less than 200 songs, in the sort of Acadiana area. Some of those were released on Rounder Records, a little bit less than 25% of them. Most of them, though, have just been in the archives of the Library of Congress and to some degree in the archives here at Dupre Library.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what this is, it's my effort to try to... figure out what they recorded when they were here. We know a good bit about the French stuff. That's mainly what's been recorded, but they also found quite a bit of English stuff, instrumental tunes, spirituals, different sorts of traditional music that we don't always normally associate with this particular area. So it's really just my attempt to kind of grapple with all of that stuff in its entirety.
Awesome. Yeah, I read through a little bit of it, and it's really interesting. I had a great time reading it. A lot of that information on the artists and where they come from is not available anywhere else, really. I don't know how you found out. How did you go about finding information on these people?
Well, in those days when the Lomaxes were recording, it was very different from now. You know, now... we could just use our iPads or our iPhones to record anyone we met on the street. Then they were using the most modern technology then available for making sound recordings, but those devices were about 315 pounds. They took up the whole back of their Model A Ford. And when they weren't near a power source, they had to run the recording device off of their car power. They had an adapter to run it off of their car power. So their focus really was what was the songs and what they saw as preserving the songs. And they didn't really have too much time to do too much investigation into the performers. And
right. They
just weren't as interested in the lives of the performers as folklorists would be today. But they also just didn't have the leisure to spend a lot of time recording the life histories of people on their machines. It was very expensive and cumbersome. So they were more interested just in the songs, and they just didn't keep field notes of the people. And so, like you say, we don't know that much about the people that they recorded. And while that wasn't necessarily the focus of the book, I did try to piece together the biographies of some of the performers, which is in some cases I had success with, in some cases I didn't. One of the first things I did was I would look at census records, marriage records, death certificates, World War I draft cards, and many of the performers do show up in those records, and so I was able to piece together biographical details. In some cases, I talked to the descendants of some of the performers, and in some cases the descendants maintained that their you know, ancestors couldn't possibly be the people recorded, because they didn't know their ancestors to be musical. But but that may just be a result of their ancestors not really letting on to their kids or their grandkids that they were musical, and it may just be a chapter of their lives that that their family didn't necessarily know about. Sometimes the Lomaxes met people in bars and recorded them, and they themselves may have forgotten that they made the recordings. So I did have some fun putting together some of those stories, and hopefully that added a little bit of context to the music.
Right. And you also do you have descriptions of some of the songs and like where there's parallels between other French songs or English songs, right?
Yeah. But that's essentially what I tried to do is after transcribing all the songs and translating them if they were in French. I tried to look at other what a folklorist would call cognates or analogs of those songs in other parts of the world. Most of the songs are traditional French songs, and parallels to those songs show up in all over France. But then a lot of those songs are also just old European songs that show up not just in France, but also, say, Portugal or Spain or even German variants. And then for the songs in English, some of them are American folk songs, and they show up in different parts of America in other folk song collections. And certainly there are a number of parallels with New France and Acadie, you know, songs that show up here, but also in Acadie. And then, of course, there's British traditional music, and there are various collections that sort of provide typologies and classifications for British traditional music. Particularly, there's a landmark study called The English and Scottish Popular Ballads by a guy named Francis Child, and they did, the Lomaxes did find a number of what are called child ballads down here, sung in English.
That's interesting. And so we just played Batson. We started off the show with Batson. Mm-hmm. Did you choose that song for a specific reason?
That song to me was one of the richest and most entertaining songs to research, particularly because it had a family connection. I think what I'll do, if you don't mind, Megan, is I'll go ahead and just read the note for it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I spent all this time writing this sucker, so I think I might just read some of the notes, and this will give a full account of the Batson story, or at least a thorough account of it.
Yeah.
This was sung by a guy named Stephen Chain, whose real name was Wilson Jones. Stephen Chain was a stage name that a number of performers at the time used, African American performers particularly. So I think of it as kind of like Lil Wayne or something, or the Notorious B.I.G., right? Like a flashy stage name that people used.
Right.
And in the book, I have some background on what exactly Stephen Chain meant. But anyway, here's the head note to Batson. So the Lomax's collection, Our Singing Country, John Lomax remarks that he was unable to verify Stephen Chain's claim that the song was based on an actual murder and subsequent trial in the area of Lake Charles. As the legal scholar Richard Underwood points out, however, Lomax's effort toward this end must have been minimal. the case of Albert Edwin Ed Batson and his alleged murder of the Earle family in the environs of Welsh, Louisiana in 1902 was infamous, and Jones's ballad constitutes a vernacular echo and retelling of a story that had been at one time a statewide and even national sensation. In Jones's song, Batson is a hapless, somewhat oppressed laborer accused of a crime he did not commit. Apprehended while window shopping, he is convicted and gruesomely executed, much to the horror of his adoring family. His last request is that his daughters be well cared for. With little exception, newspaper reports of the time painted a starkly divergent portrait of Batson. "Fiendish deeds of a tramp," reads at the front page of New Orleans's Times-Picayune story, one of many that would run, published 2 days after the mutilated bodies of the Earle family were discovered. This article essentially follows the accepted narrative surrounding the killings, the same narrative that the prosecution would successfully articulate in the subsequent trial. Batson had worked for some time as the hired hand of Ward Earle, son of L.S. Earle, a prosperous farmer who had brought his family from Kansas to Calcasieu Parish. Someone who many witnesses later testified was Batson, claiming to be Ward Earle, apparently tried to sell Earle's team of livestock in Lake Charles, arousing suspicions that led to the discovery of the murdered family. Batson, meanwhile, had departed for his hometown in Missouri, leaving incriminating evidence in Ward Earle's buggy, a vest containing a cryptic suicide note and other possessions linked to Batson. As all circumstantial evidence seemed to suggest Batson's guilt, he was arrested in Missouri and ultimately extradited to Calcasieu Parish, where he stood trial for murder. Already notorious, the case began to assume legendary proportions when the first verdict of guilty was reversed and a second trial announced. Things became more complicated when an acquaintance of the defense attorney, the Associated Press reporter Charles Dobson, also known as Miles Dobson, published a book called Guilty: Sidelights on the Batson Case, a Recrudescence of the Murder of the Earle Family in Louisiana. That was published in 1903, which postulated that two unknown villains had perpetrated the crime, possibly as a retribution for an ancient grievance dating back to the Earle family's past lives in Kansas. Although the hearsay evidence that led to Dobson's conclusion was never admitted into court, the book caused quite a stir and contributed to the controversy surrounding his eventual execution on August 14, 1903, as well as the lingering doubts about Batson's guilt. Almost a century after his death, for instance, an article by journalist Jim Bradshaw in the October 28, 1997 edition of the Lafayette Advertiser accepts key tenets of Dobson's hypothesis. Anyway, the note goes on and on to give the background of the Batson trial. Mm. So basically, what's interesting to me is that among other things, is the song makes Batson, the murderer, out to be a hero.
Right.
And he has two kids in the song and an adoring wife, and they're crying as he's executed. You know, in reality, he seems to have been an itinerant laborer. He had no family, at least no nuclear family. He fled to Missouri after the murder, and a sheriff and the deputy from Welsh were sent after him. They apprehended him, and he was eventually, found guilty of murder and hung. But there was all this controversy around it. It was one of these it really was probably like one of these celebrity trials or famous,
right,
controversial, sensationalized trials we hear about today, like the Trayvon Martin trial, right? It was a national sensation, right? But there's these two different versions of it, one of which is echoed in the song. But anyway, it became particularly interesting for me when I was doing some research trying to look at old newspaper accounts of the murder. I found a picture of Batson in the Times-Picayune, and he was a young, really handsome guy. And so I kept digging, and I found another picture of the sheriff and the deputy. And I was very excited by this, and I called my wife into the room, Claire Caffrey, Claire Oliver originally, and I said, "Claire, you never could believe this. I found the sheriff and the deputy." And Claire came into the room, and her jaw dropped, and she kind of turned white, and she said, "I know that man." And I said, how could you possibly know any of these people? This happened in 1902, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this is over 100 years ago. And she goes and gets her family photo album and brings it out. And she shows me a picture of this guy who is obviously an older version of the deputy.
Oh, my goodness.
And so her great-great-grandfather is a guy named Isaac Fontenot, who ended up being the deputy in the case. And in the song, he's a bad guy. In the song, he goes up to Batson, who's window shopping on Ryan Street in Lake Charles,
right.
Slaps him across the face, and drags him to jail, right? In real life, though, he ended up being a hero, and it sort of made his career, and he later became the sheriff of Jennings.
Wow. That's incredible.
But anyway, it's a really just an interesting story. And actually, Jim Bradshaw, I talked about him in the book. He is working on a book about the case.
The Batson
case. So he's going to go even deeper into it. And I've talked to him a little bit about it, and I can't wait to see what he digs up. One interesting thing is that the Batson family, to this day, maintains Batson's guilt, the Batson family up in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think eventually we'll have like a rapprochement between Claire's family and the Batson family. And Claire has learned the song, and we're going to perform it at some of these book release gigs.
Right,
So we're going to try to let bygones be bygones, you know?
Yeah. And the book release gig that you're talking about, there's one this Saturday?
Yes, there's one this Saturday at the Louisiana Book Festival.
November 2nd?
November 2nd, yeah.
Yeah. At what time?
At 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
Yeah, on the grounds of the state capitol.
Right. So if you're listening to Encore at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning, you still have time to make it.
That's right.
If you're listening at 3 p.m. on Sunday, you've missed it. But, yeah, it's gonna be exciting. I had no idea that there was that much history in this song. That's really cool. With you guys, you know, with
yeah.
Claire's family, that's amazing. Well, we should move on to the next song. It's
L'amour et fanatisme.
Fanatisme. Who sang that?
Well, that's an interesting question. According to the Lomaxes, a guy named Alfred Granger sang this.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to Alfred Granger Jr., who is the son of Alfred Granger of New Iberia, and he maintains that there's no way this could possibly be his father. So I suppose to some degree it's still a mystery. Alfred Granger Sr. Was from Lorville, and he was friends with Davous Bérard. And according to the Lomaxes, this is who it is, but according to Granger's son, Alfred Granger Jr., this is not his father, and maybe rather one of his brothers. I haven't been able to figure that out. So maybe or maybe not, this is Alfred Granger Sr.
Do you think that any of the people that the Lomax recorded gave just random names?
That's actually highly likely. In some of the songs, the more bawdy songs, the mm-hmm. more racy songs, it was really common for performers to give false names,
yeah.
give pseudonyms. There's a guy in, I think it's in Jennings, who gives his name as the Mighty Darby Hicks. And Darby Hicks is actually was a pseudonym that jazz musicians and blues musicians often gave when they didn't want to be identified for whatever reason, whether it's because they were with another record company or because, I don't know, they just didn't want anyone to know who they were. They had some kind of legal issues, right? There's this guy, Mr. Bourneau, you know about, Megan, and he, you know, that's the only name we have for him is Mr. Bourneau. If you look, though, in the Library of Congress card catalog, Bourneau is written in pencil, and there's an older name there that was scratched out. So Alan Lomax is the only one who would have had the nerve to go and physically, you know, write on the card catalog at the in the American Folklife Center. So he scratched out Barnes and wrote Bourneau, which is interesting because there are people with the name Barnes around in the southwest part of the state, and there are also people named Bourne. So, but there's no one named Bourneau. Sometimes people. You know, and this happened in other folk song collections, you know, that people just didn't want, if they were singing something that was a little bit naughty or bawdy, they didn't necessarily want the government having a record of that, right?
Right.
And that's what the Lomaxes were. They were working for the
right.
Library of Congress. You know, they were working for the government, so they freaked people out.
Right. All right. Well, this is Mr. Alfred Granger singing L'amour et fanatisme.
Que j'appris de mes ancêtres, Étienne, dans l'envie bleue. Donc mon âme est prise, je vais donc te quitter, bientôt je vais partir, en te disant adieu, mon pauvre cœur se brise. Dans le premier combat où je voulais mourir, pourquoi faut-il que la loi me défende de m'attacher à toi? Pour qui j'ai tout quitté, je vais partir à l'arme de commande pour conquérir gloire et liberté. Enfant, j'aurais voulu te consacrer ma vie, vivre de ton amour, mourir à tes genoux. Enfant, cache-le-moi toujours. J'aime à t'entendre. J'ai trahi pour toi mes frères et ma patrie. Pourquoi faut-il que la loi me défende de m'attacher à toi? Pour qui j'ai tout quitté, je vais partir à l'arme de commande pour conquérir gloire et liberté.
And that was Monsieur Alfred Granger.
We think.
It could maybe not be him. Singing L'amour et fanatisme. And did you want to offer up a little bit of, like, what that song is about, a little bit of information on that?
Or? Sure, yeah. This was a sort of an aha moment for me when I found this. It was just kind of very different from what I would have expected to hear someone singing about, someone particularly from Lorville in the 30s. I was trying to transcribe this, and there was this what sounded like Allah, and I was thinking that it was some sort of conjugation of Allah, the verb Allah, that I didn't understand. Mm. And I was just fighting with it for a long time until I finally dug up basically a parallel version of this song, and I realized that the Allah or the Allah that was being spoken about here was actually the Islamic deity Allah.
And
to explain that, let me just I'll just read the my translation
okay.
to give you a hint of what the song's about.
Okay.
This is how it goes. Christian of the sad blue eyes, of which my soul is enamored, I will leave you. Soon I will go. Bidding you farewell, my poor heart breaks. In the first wave of battle, I wanted to die. Why must my creed restrain me from clinging to you for whom I've left everything? I will leave. Allah commands me to conquer for glory and liberty. Child, I want to consecrate my life to you, to live by your love and die at your knees. Child, hide me. I love to hear you always. For you, I've betrayed my brothers and my homeland. Why must my creed restrain me from clinging to you for whom I've left everything? I will leave. Allah commands me to conquer for glory and liberty.
That's really interesting.
So pretty mysterious. Basically the story of a Muslim soldier who's in love with a Christian girl with big blue eyes, who wants to be with her, but can't. He's commanded to go into battle and sacrifice himself in battle.
Do you have? Where did the song that you found that's parallel to that one? Where did you find that one? Where does it come from?
I found a number of published versions of this, and actually it was apparently a hugely popular song in the mid 1800s. It was written in the 1840s, I believe, or mid 1800s, and later became a pretty popular what's called a romance. There are different meanings of the term romance, but what it meant in sort of mid 19th century France is basically a sentimental song sung from the first person, usually a love song of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And one interesting thing about this also, this particular song, is with traditional songs, it's one of the characteristics of traditional songs is that they tend to be anonymous, right? Like, we don't know who wrote most of these traditional songs. You know, with Cajun music now, many of the songs we do know, but many of them are lost to history. But certainly many of these old, if we're talking about British songs, ballads, French songs, plays or chansons, less, most of those songs, you would never have any idea who the songwriter is, right? It's lost to history. But this song actually was written by a guy named Amadé Carrion Latour, or Amadé de Carrion Latour, who was a French aristocrat who lived, sort of a minor aristocrat who lived near Bordeaux. And he was writing mainly for, you know, fellow aristocrats, but then also for print publication. And so songs like this would have been performed in drawing rooms and salons for essentially wealthy people, well-off people. It appears in a number of collections of sort of light opera, which you can kind of hear. There's sort of operatic style to the delivery. Right. I even found, let me see if I can find it. I have it here in the book somewhere. I found a reference to the song in a Victorian novel it's not a novel. It's a story, a Victorian story called The Donkeyshire Militia by the writer Marie-Louise Tramé, better known as Ouida. And this is gives you a hint of where something like this would have been performed. So let me see. Published in Bentley's Miscellany in 1859, The Donkeyshire Militia, which is this story, revolves around the romantic intrigue that develops between a dashing young militia captain and Beatrice, a willful and intelligent young woman who is featured in a number of Ouida's stories. In one scene, Beatrice and the young captain entertain the company with a take on L'amour et fanatisme. That's the song that we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Beatrice gave him a pretty half-annoyed, half-amused glance, put her head up and looked disdainful, and turning to the piano, sang Fleur de l'âme with a thrilling, passionné, pathetic voice that went near to making poor Poppleton weep. Dunbar asked her to play Amour et fanatisme for him, and addressed the chrétienne aux longs yeux bleus with such artistic style that Beatrice began to forgive him, and they sang Italian bravuras till the rest of the Donkeyshire grew mad with envy. You can see in the company what sort of company this song would have been in, right? Italian bravuras, and these other sort of sentimental tunes, right? But the really interesting thing to think about is how did that song get to Lauraville in the you know, early 1900s? If it was Alfred Granger, there's a chance that maybe he picked it up when he was in France in World War One, because I did find his draft card, and a lot of these guys who sang for the Lomaxes had been in World War One, and they sang a lot of songs that that were much more contemporary, that were from the mid 19th century or late 19th century, right? So it's interesting because the Lomaxes went to New Iberia and they went to Lauraville because they were really looking for Acadian music, right? They were looking for what they called Acadian ballads, even though a ballad is really is a type of a British song. Right. They were looking for Acadian ballads, and they knew that Lauraville, right, and Fausse Pointe was ground zero for where the Acadians went, right? As we know today, right? That's where the first Acadians in the area went. So that's what they were looking for. But these groups of people from around Lauraville and Fausse Pointe, Lake Fausse Pointe today, right? They actually sang songs that were much more contemporary that couldn't have been Acadian because they were written in the 1800s, right?
Right, yeah.
A long time after the Acadians got here.
Correct.
So it's interesting that a lot of the people who were Acadians, they were singing modern French music, mm-hmm. and not always songs that were Acadian in origin, you know.
So doing your research, do you find that like most of the songs you think are more modern French songs that the Lomaxes did?
I would say more than anything else, yeah, they're modern. They're more modern. I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, by modern though, I mean like late 1700s,
right.
1800s. Most of them are strophic, which just means they're written in stanzas and they're lyric songs. There are, though, a bunch of really old songs which are called chansons en laisse, which certainly could have come from Acadie, right? They could have they're just old French songs that that maybe went through Acadie, but maybe they came from other French immigrant groups. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say with a lot of the really old stuff. I think there's a case to be made that in a handful of songs that they came from Acadie, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think you definitely don't want to generalize and say that these are all old Acadian songs,
right?
Because some of them, you know, factually just aren't. But there are some songs that only show up in Louisiana and Acadie, right? There's songs that only show up in Louisiana repertoires and Acadian repertoires,
mm-hmm.
And actually those songs. You know, I think there's a better argument to be made that there's an Acadian connection, you know. And to me, those songs are the ones that are dealing with boat travel and, like, occupations that seem to be associated with maritime Canada, you know, like voyageur songs and things like that. There's a lot of those that show up in the Acadian repertoires that also show up here. But then they didn't go back. Those songs didn't seem to make it back to France, right? So you kind of have to say, well, they must have come with voyageurs or with Acadians. So I think if we're looking for an Acadian connection, that's the place to look. That's,
right.
That's at least my hunch.
Yeah. I mean, I got a bunch of CDs when I went to Brittany, like of traditional ballad kind of songs. And I haven't dug into them yet, but there's one labeled like so many years on the sea,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't gotten to listen to it yet, but I'm excited to. I only saw one, you're right, of like sea songs, kind of sea traveling mm-hmm. kind of songs, even though in Brittany they are like really on the coast. And I mean, anyway,
yeah, there's a lot of those. It's hard, it's even though you don't want to with the old sea shanties, some of those are really widespread too. Like there's the song that the Hofpower sisters sing,
right?
C'est en sur mer, And that tells the story of a guy, of a boat that is at sea for 7 years, and they run out of food. And Tijon, who's a character who shows up in a lot of French folk songs, he sacrifices himself, which to me seems like a Christian allegory to some degree. But anyway, that song shows up in Acadie in Louisiana, but it also shows up in Portuguese versions and in Spanish versions. In fact, it's apparently the national ballad of Portugal. And there's all these, it's still sort of reenacted in all these Portuguese celebrations. Mm-hmm. And then in Brazil, too, it's apparently really popular. Because Brazil was largely settled by Portuguese colonists. So a lot of this stuff, if you look at it long enough, it just spreads out all over the place.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing. Did you want to move on to another song?
Sure, yeah.
You had, I think next on the list we had Adam in the Garden, Pen and Leaves.
Yeah. Do you want me to introduce it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll introduce the performers and then we can talk about the song after we play it, I guess. One connection that I was having to make was the Lomaxes went to Avery Island in 1934 and they stayed with E.A. McElhinney, who is really the patriarch, I suppose, in a lot of ways of the Avery Island we know today. He's the guy behind the jungle gardens, and he's well known as a conservationist, really an ecological conservationist. But he was also interested in cultural conservation in a way. He in 1933 published a book called Before the War Spirituals. And what it is, it's a collection of spirituals that he grew up hearing at Avery Island, sung in the church at Avery Island. And he believed that the older style of singing spirituals was in decline and was evaporating. And he teamed up with a classical violinist from New Orleans. I forget the guy's name right now. Hmm. And they transcribed over 100 songs from the singing of two ladies who had grown up on and around Avery Island singing in the churches. And by transcribe, I mean he transcribed it into a musical score. And EA transcribed the words. Apparently, when the Lomaxes came down, they either knew about the book or somehow they had a connection with E.A. McElhinney, possibly through the Carnegie Corporation, who they were sort of in league with, and they stayed at Avery Island, and E.A. put them in touch with the two singers that he had used as the source for his collection, and so they recorded, I think, 7 or 8. Spirituals from these ladies, and the spirituals also show up in the book Before the War Spirituals. So together, I think it's exciting because I think we have a really great document of what spiritual singing around here in the really southern part, coastal area of Louisiana sounded like, and it's really really beautiful stuff. I mean, these ladies, Alberta Bradford and Becky Elsie, were just hugely talented performers, and these songs are really beautiful. I hope that more will be done with these songs because they're great and they really should be part of our repertoire here. You know, they should be part of the repertoire of traditional song in Louisiana, you know.
They should, yeah.
But anyway, this one is called Adam in the Garden, Pen and Leaves. And I'll talk about it after it's done playing.
All right.
Up and down the Garden, Tin and Leaf. Shouldn't it please the Lord that I'm in your garden? Shouldn't it please all ears? Where is that I'm all ears? Where is that I'm all ears? Where is that I'm that I'm in your garden? Shouldn't it please?
And that was Alberta Bradford and Becky Elzey singing Adam in the Garden, Pen and Leaves. And if you're just joining us here today on Encored, we've been talking with Joshua Caffrey, who's releasing a book on November 2nd. And what is the name exactly of the book again, Joshua?
It is called Traditional Music in Coastal Louisiana, the 1934 Lomax Recordings.
You have it. And so we've been discussing the history of certain songs and if they correspond to this kind of a version, a song that's kind of the same in a different part of the country. And I mean, not country, the world. And it's really interesting. How long have you been working on this book, Josh?
I suppose for about 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah, I mean, not constantly for 5 years, but on and off for 5 years. You know, just doing the transcriptions took a couple of years, particularly some of the more difficult French and Creole transcriptions. And then the research took another year, and then writing took another year or so, and then sort of putting it all together took another year or so.
Awesome. Well, did you want to talk a little bit about the song we just heard, Adam in the Garden, Pen and Leaves?
Sure, yeah. That was Alberta Bradford and Becky Elzey, who grew up on and around Avery Island. And that song isn't really common. It does show up in a couple of other places. Basically, what these spirituals do, and I guess spirituals of this era in general, is they'll take an idea that shows up oftentimes in the Old Testament, Though in Revelations quite a bit too in the New Testament, just sort of emphasize this one sort of central idea, or oftentimes it's an image, through repetition and call and response. And here it's obviously Adam pinning leaves in the garden, right?
Yeah.
So the lyrics are, "Oh Eve, where is Adam? He's in the garden, pinning leaves." So for that one, it was pretty straightforward. You know, what the biblical story was. And in some of the other songs, it's not so clear. And one thing I do in the notes and descriptions is I go in and try to figure out where in the Bible, you know, what passages in the Bible the certain images were drawn from. But I'll read a little bit about this story, because about the song, I mean, because it does have a couple of interesting parallels. So as a spiritual shout song, and even in secular versions, the tune known as Even Adam or Adam in the Garden was apparently fairly widespread in oral tradition at one time. Not surprisingly, it can be found to this day in African-American communities that, like Avery Island, maintained a fairly self-contained conservative tradition. The song survives, for instance, in the Geechee culture of the Georgia Sea Islands as a ring shout song with some slight variations. A number of commentators, such as Art Rosenbaum and Robert Gordon, noted that performers of the song in McIntosh County on Simon's Island substitute pickin' for pinnin'. Rosenbaum explains that their performance of the song includes pantomime, which would have been somewhat visually awkward had the motion conformed to the original lyrics. So they actually acted out on St. Simon's Island. They would act out the song with the motions in pantomime. And so they didn't want to do pinning leaves, and they substituted it for picking. Mm-hmm. So when you can actually see video performers of these singers doing this, and they're scraping up leaves from the ground, right? But they're not pinning them on themselves, you know. But anyway, these songs recorded at Avery Island are really just gorgeous, and I hope that people will look into them more closely and maybe try to work out versions of the songs, you know.
You had picked out another one. Is I Want to Go to Heaven? Is that also one from Avery Island?
Yeah, we can do that one too.
While we're on the subject of spirituals?
Definitely. Yeah, let's do that one.
You want to talk a little bit about it?
Sure. This one is actually pretty well known, shows up in a lot of other collections of spirituals. And the basic idea is the idea of wanting to go to heaven dressed in white. And that shows up all over the Book of Revelation, which was a major source for spiritual singing. The idea that upon, you know, going to heaven, or whether it's as a result of some sort of rapture or just after death, your soul is going to somehow be clarified and you'll be dressed in white, right?
Right.
Certainly the idea of heaven and whiteness, you know, whether it's angels or whatnot, is pretty common. But here in this song, that gets emphasized quite a bit. And certainly even to this day, if you go to some of the Baptist churches around here, you'll see the singers dressed in pure white garments, right? But anyway, this is a beautiful song called I Want to Go to Heaven, All Dressed in White.
And who sang that one?
Alberta Bradford and Becky Elsie.
Oh, it's the same girls.
Same ladies, yeah.
All right.
Avery Island.
Yeah, all right. Alberta Bradford and Becky Elsie with I Want to Go to Heaven Dressed in White. And we're almost out of time. I was telling Josh in between the little break here, we're almost out of time. But we're going to have enough time to talk about one more song. And let's recap the name of your book again, one more time for everybody.
It is called Traditional Music in Coastal Louisiana, the 1934 Lomax Recordings. It's kind of a mouthful, and it's sort of a big title for something that's so narrow in focus, but I suppose what I kind of try to do in the book is use the Lomax recordings as a vehicle for giving my theory and my sort of take on the old traditional music of the area and what it looks like, how it plays out.
Right. And where can your book be found? If anybody's interested,
you can get it at Amazon.com. It's probably the easiest way. Or if you are hearing this on Saturday morning, you can come to the book festival and get it at a discount. And would love to sign it, of course. And we're going to be playing some of the songs. Or you can get it through LSU Press, which is just lsupress.org, I think.
Okay. And if people want to hear the songs, because it doesn't come with a CD, but how can they access the music?
I am soon going to be releasing a website that will have all of the songs. It should be up within hopefully the next month. That'll just be lomax1934.com, where you can hear all of the songs. If you need to hear them before then, you can go to the Dupre Library and the Center for Louisiana Studies, where they have collections of all the songs. Actually, as part of the research I did, I tried to ensure that our archive at UL and the Dupre Library had copies of all of the songs.
That's awesome.
And we do have them all now. Or you can go to the Library of Congress, where they're also held.
Much closer here in Lafayette, if you're here. But so let's introduce, let's go out on the Waco Girl. And
okay.
You want to talk a little bit about that before we go out?
Sure. Yeah, like I said earlier, there was quite a lot in the way of English traditional music recorded alongside with the alongside French music.
Mm-hmm.
And the English stuff really hasn't had very much attention paid to it, but I was pretty keen to figure out exactly what there was recorded in 1934 that was English. In Crowley, they recorded a number of people singing both English and French. They
mm-hmm.
recorded this one guy named Eddie Murphy, no relation to the performer Eddie Murphy that I know of. But he recorded only one song. He recorded a song called "The Waco Girl," which is a ballad. It's not a canonical ballad. It wasn't included in Francis Child's study, but it's a ballad that whose roots go all the way back to I believe the early 1600s. It was originally called something like "The Whitam Miller," and it was a true life account of a murder that happened in the English countryside. A miller killed his bride to be and threw her body into the river, and later it came floating through town.
Right.
Anyway, it gained all these sort of descendants. It became known as mm-hmm. the Bloody Miller. In Ireland, it was known as the Wexford Girl, and it applied to and apparently it dealt with related to a particular murder that had happened there. It became popular with in Tennessee as the Knoxville Girl. It became a bluegrass standard. Waco, go ahead.
There's also one like the Ohio River, and it's got the same story basically.
Yeah, it became this common story, right? And the Waco Girl, it's interesting, you know, there are different theories about how it became the Waco Girl. The most convincing to me is the most convincing theory is that Waco, Texas, was settled largely by Irish immigrants from County Wexford. The Wexford Girl was one of the variants of this song. So it's likely that that they brought the song with them, and then they either something like this happened in Waco, or they just, you know, they told the story. It hasn't changed all that much in the hundreds of years that it's been around. You know, sometimes the guy does the deed with a piece of hackwood, or sometimes a house board. And so details change, but the story remains the same.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. We'll get to that song. Is that all you had to say about it? Do you
sure.
want to read a little bit about it?
I can if you want. Let me find it. One second. I'll just read a little bit of the note here.
Mm-hmm.
Although some observers have argued the Waco Girl in question could have originally referred to an Indian girl from the Oklahoma tribe, a scholar named Anderson offers the convincing speculation that the variant most likely originated in the environs of Waco, Texas, pointing out that an older version could have arrived with the many 19th century Irish immigrants from County Wexford,
right.
Which is basically what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
For extensive examinations of this song, which is also known as the Berkshire Tragedy, that's the name I was looking for, there's a guy named Malcolm Laws who wrote a study of American ballads called American Balladry and British Broadsides, and he has a breakdown of all the many different variants of it throughout America.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us here on Encore today, here on KRVS 88.7. And we've been in the studio with Josh Caffrey about his new book coming out. Look for it. It's about the Lomax recordings, the John and Alan Lomax recordings that they did in 1934 in the Acadiana region. And it looks like we don't really have any time for this song, but join us next week, and thanks for contributing during our 50th anniversary fall fundraiser. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time.
Francomix avec Val. La meilleure des musiques en français. Tous les jeudis soirs à 9h sur KRVS.
KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.